all the time, and when he did, I just found it a relief. Moses kept speaking. Talking to him, though, that I didn't get. She betrayed our love, me, our vows, and I agreed to try to work that shit out, and every phone conversation from the first after she got back from that reunion to the last when I caught her telling him to stop phoning was another betrayal. Why didn't she tell me he was calling? Why didn't she just hang up? And every time her phone rang from then on, was I gonna think it was him or some other guy she was asking? What if?
I can see that, I said quietly.
She told me in counseling that maybe she needed the attention, to feel attractive, to feel wanted. By that time, it was flowers for no reason and me breaking my back to prove I was doing my part for our family, and regular date nights to keep the us in our marriage. So I did not get why she needed another man's attention when outside of what I was giving my girls, she had all of mine. Seemed to me she was a selfish bitch. I did not share this. So, I called bullshit, he declared.
I can see that too, I replied.
And I really could. Is that enough to end a marriage? Break apart a family? He asked.
I don't know, darling, I answered.
I didn't either. What I knew was, after I lost my shit when I found out my wife fucked another man, I got myself together. About that. But those phone calls, jacked with my head, I could deal with the one-time thing. A wake-up call. For us both. We were on the wrong path, and that wasn't the way to yank us back to the right one, but shit happens. But those fucking calls, Charlene. All I could think was not about those calls or even about her needing attention. Once I knew he was still phoning, any time I thought about a call, all I could think about was him inside my wife. Blinded by it. Pissed as hell at it. Couldn't get it out of my head. And the question became, should I sacrifice my peace of mind for my children, and worse, teach them if, God forbid, they find themselves in the same situation, that they should swallow betrayal and live on the edge with distrust clouding every moment, and in the end give up any chance of true happiness? I can't answer that for you, Moses. Well, I could. After she nearly bankrupted me, taking me to court repeatedly to teach me a lesson about how she feels when she doesn't get what she wants, using our daughters as tools to do that. I couldn't imagine the woman I married had that in her. But she did. So I got my answer. And so did our daughters, watching their mother put their father through that. Don't think it was the man she met that made her stop. I think it was the fact her daughters were drifting away. Angry at her for making shit ugly. That's what made her stop.
I'm glad something did, I told him.
Me too.
When he said no more, I asked carefully, how are things now? I mean, you said at the grocery store that you two had it together, but
I can barely stand to look at her. Oh boy. That, he went on, I do for my daughters, when school functions mean I have to be in her space. And don't take that anger at her as me still having feelings for her. I don't. That anger is not about what she did to me, to us, but what she did to my girls. No one fucks with my girls, and for 4 years I had no choice but to put up with my wife fucking with our girls.
Yep, a selfish bitch.
Other than school functions, he continued, we do not have one of those arrangements where we share Christmas Eve dinner, or I come to her family's big 4th of July parties. There's my house, our family, and there's their mother's house, and the family they got with her.
To that, I had no choice but to utter an understatement. That's very sad.
Do I deserve that, for being a man and being clueless, and making babies with my wife and not pitching in?
I shook my head. I don't think so. I mean, she should have said something.
Yeah, she should have. We didn't start our family young. We were both in our 30s.
Our friends had kids, both our families are in town. We're both tight with them. We weren't immature and finding our way on our own. And we'd been together a long time. She knew how to communicate with me. I nodded that I heard him. I still fucked up. That was on me. Saying what I just said, it was me who was old enough to know better than to make babies with my wife and not take care of all of them. And I didn't. I don't want to, you know, butt in here and defend you when all you've shared is all I know about the situation. I wasn't around, and I've never met the woman. But even though that really was not good, Moses, with what happened, I think it's safe to say something would have happened anyway. Yeah, he agreed. Though easy for me to think that, because it makes me the good guy in the end, no matter how you look at it. I just gave him big eyes, because that was true. Still, the woman stepped out on him rather than telling him to step up. Then she took out her anger at him using their daughters. She had it in her to fuck their shit up. And that was going to happen, one way or another. I'd pretty much said this already, therefore I didn't repeat it. So, there it is, he stated. Yes, I agreed. There it, is. Your turn. My throat closed, and I felt my joints seize. Moses didn't miss anything, and I knew he didn't miss any of that. He still didn't let up. What'd he do to you? I didn't see this coming. Tit for tat. He laid it out, made himself vulnerable, showing me the way, making it safe to follow. I still didn't want to take that way. I think, I began. Baby, you look good, and you dress good. And you kiss good. And you listen good. And you open up good. He lifted a hand and gestured between us. I want this. I want more. I want to know more about you. And eventually I'll want to be inside you. Oh, God. This is too fast, I told him. Too fast and too soon. 5 minutes ago this wasn't going to work. Now, I can go slow, but I cannot have you preparing to bolt every time something tweaks you. Preparing to bolt and ready to end us. I need you to talk to me. His ex had not talked to him, and his whole life got derailed. Damn. I shook my head but said, I don't know what happened. He's just in there. How? In my bones. In my soul. It was all good, and then it wasn't, and I was across the room, and I don't even know how I got here. I just know he was back. He's dead. Not in a way he'll ever be gone. Dead is dead, sweetheart. It's you who can control if he stays alive the ways he can. He beat me. It was like he crossed the room, wrapped his hand around my throat and squeezed so I couldn't take a breath. The anger burning from him was so strong, the air in the room vanished. I did not enjoy having sex with him. He did not care. He took what he wanted whenever he wanted. I'd felt the room. Why did I say more? Now his arms were bent at his sides, his fingers curled into his fists, his chest moving steady but fast, the heaves powerful. Rhythmically lifting his entire torso as his eyes stayed glued to me. I'm too much for you, or any man to take on, I whispered. You wet for me? He growled. Say what? Are you wet for me? Oh, Lordy. Just him asking that question made me wet, ter. For him. Even if we were having a serious conversation, that shouldn't be sexy at all. It was jerky, but I nodded my head. You were there with me, definitely there with me. I was about to take it further, and then you were across the room. What triggered that? I don't know, it just happened. Something triggered it, baby. I shook my head. No one since him? He asked, going for gentle, I could tell. It was still slightly terse because he was still highly pissed after I shared what Leon had done to me. Yes, but none that mattered. I matter. I closed my eyes so tight I felt the wrinkles in my lids, because this was oh so true.
That's it. I matter, he said to me, and you're either scared you're gonna fuck this up, or you're scared you're not reading it right, and you'll find you've picked another asshole.
I opened my eyes. I'm not sure I have it in me to give you what you deserve, I admitted.
And what's that?
Goodness. No drama. Just a clean go-without history and piles of shit you gotta wade through to maybe make it to the other side. But that result is not guaranteed, because there's so much shit. You might find you need to give up for your own sake.
You think I'm gonna give up on you?
He asked, a tad bit scarily.
I don't know.
More, I'm not sure I'm worth the effort. The air evacuated the room again, because he was pissed as shit again. I decided maybe it was best if I stopped talking.
I thought we got past this,
Moses said when I said nothing. You don't see.
Make me see.
Suddenly I threw up both hands at my sides. It wasn't what Leon did to me, Moses, I snapped. He was always good for nothing, and I let him have me. What does that say about me?
I don't know, but obviously you do, so I want to hear you say it.
My sister, Dorothea, she was the pretty one. She was the quiet one. She was the sweet one. She got the handsome man. She made the beautiful family.
And that wasn't for you.
I was the hellraiser. I was good for nothing, just like Leon.
So you had sass, and that means you didn't deserve a good life with a decent man in it?
I was never good enough.
Good enough for what, Charlene? Good enough for who?
Good enough for my teachers, who thought I was slow. Good enough for my father, who took off on us. Good enough for my aunts and uncles, who saw a hellion and thought I'd never amount to anything.
So you proved them right.
I lifted my chin. Damn straight.
And then you had time enough without their bullshit, and with your husband dead, and not beating you or raping you, to realize who you were, and you proved them wrong. Cause you know, baby, you know a man takes you without you wanting him to. He's your husband or not. It's rape.
My teeth clacked audibly. I shut my mouth so fast.
I don't know who you were, sweetheart, he continued, but every day I see kids who someone doesn't think will amount to much. And even if that shit is not right, they're convinced of it, just because the asshole adults around them feel the need to share. And you know what?
What? I whispered.
In most cases, it's got fuck all to do with the kid. It's about the asshole adult feeling less, understanding their limits. And the kid's got smarts, or spirit, or big personality, or sweet disposition. And they gotta do what they gotta do to shut that down, because they're jealous as fuck. And they know deep inside they'll feel even smaller than they already are, because that kid is gonna be something. So they not only gotta drag the kid down, they gotta smother the life out of them.
Suddenly I was breathing funny.
Half the problems at Gilliam are kids with parents who don't give that first fuck, or who are so messed up it's a miracle they can get themselves out of bed in the morning, and some don't even try. He bit off. The other half are kids with parents or adults in their lives who are determined to do one thing in their miserable lives. And that's finding a way to make damn sure that child doesn't show them up by making something of themselves when they didn't have what it took to do the same thing. You know that shit people say where a kid is just misunderstood?
I nodded.
Well, in a lot of cases that shit is right. It is very rare when a kid is just a bad seed. For the most part, someone planted that seed and put a lot of effort into forcing it to grow. And in a kid, that ground is fertile. It's so much easier to think bad of ourselves than it is to think good. And that shit blooms fast and out of control.
I had a good mama, Moses, a good family. Not a good daddy, but the rest, they didn't deserve what I did to them.
If they made you feel less, Charlene, then they got what they made.
It's the woman standing across from me right now that you made, and that has nothing to do with them. I love that you think that way, but fuck, baby, he exploded, tossing both his arms wide and leaning toward me even as his outburst shocked me so much I leaned back. Do you not think I see young Sherlene's every day of my life? Do you not understand that I know more than maybe anybody how hard it is to pull yourself free of the shit you let yourself get bogged under and find your way clean? Do you not get how huge what you've done is? He lives in me, I said weakly. You let him, he clipped. Everything you do, I compare to what he did. He leaned back and crossed his arms on his chest. Well, shit, sweetheart. You're human. You had a man who did you wrong, and you found a man you like, that you might want in your life, so you're comparing the old with the new, so you can make sure you don't fuck up again. I'm not sure I can cope with you being smart and looking out for yourself, so you don't make the same mistake twice. Best get on call an Uber so you can take your sweet ass and your common sense home. At that speech, I didn't stop myself from cracking a smile. His eyes narrowed. You find something funny? Well, yeah. He uncrossed his arms and planted his hands on his hips before he rumbled warningly. I'm not being funny, baby. I decided to shut up again. In time, you will learn I'm not him, he said low. Okay, I whispered. Now, I told you we'd go slow, and you may have forgotten that, so I'll remind you, Sherlene. This is at your pace. As long as we're moving forward, I'm good. So next time I take shit too far, you don't bolt out of my arms and hold up your hand to me like I'm causing you harm. You say, Moses, honey, I need you to slow down. And that will happen, I swear it. My God, I could fall in love with this man. No, damn, I was falling in love with him. Sherlene, you hear me? He prompted when I said nothing. I hear you, honey. And you are not fucking Ubering home. I nodded. Your boys won't be watching for you, will they? I shook my head. Good, he muttered. Are we done making out? I asked. I don't know. Are we? He asked back. I pressed my lips together tight. Get over here, woman, he ordered. My breath caught. I'd heard one of the hot bunch demand that of one of his rock chicks so many times, I'd be able to buy Rome and Sniff top-of-the-line Mercedes if I had a dollar for every time I heard it. And I always just shook my head, sometimes mentally, sometimes physically, thinking if I had a man who told me to walk my ass to him, I'd walk my ass the other way. That man being Moses, I walked my ass right to him. He wrapped his arms loose around me. I placed my hands on his chest. They felt good there. Under my right one, I could feel his heart beating, strong and true. You gonna read me the riot act every time I freak out? I asked. Only when the situation warrants it, he answered. I'm gonna be some work. I told him something he couldn't have missed. He confirmed my suspicion by saying, I didn't miss that. I slid a hand up and curled my fingers around the side of his neck. His arms grew tighter. I don't want you to think I didn't love him. For some reason, that's important to me. In my way, the girl I was, not yet a woman, I loved him, I admitted. Okay, baby, he whispered. Before I hated him, I finished. He nodded before he dipped his head. His cheekbone brushing against mine as he pulled me even closer to give me a hug. A hug. He held me to him in his living room, like he intended to do that all night. And I could stand there all night. I could stand there for weeks, held in Moses Richardson's arms. Eventually, he asked, "You want ice cream?" "Yeah." He lifted his head and looked in my eyes. You want to make out some more before, after, or in the middle of ice cream? I shot him a grin. All of the above? He grinned back. When he dipped his head that time, it was to capture my mouth. He kissed me soft before he slid his tongue inside. I wrapped my arms around his neck and pressed against him. He angled his head and took the kiss deep. I cupped the back of his head with a hand to hold him right where he was. It didn't feel good being held to him like this, feeling his strength pressed against me, his tongue stroking mine leisurely, taking it slow, giving, sweet. The wonders of all that had no words to describe them, and I lost myself to whatever that was. Since I was lost, happy where I was, in his embrace, connected to him, Moses gave me all I was willing to take. He did scoop out some ice cream for us. He just did it. Later. Chapter 7 Choices, Shirlene. Afternoon the next day, I was sitting in my navigator, staring at the high school, my phone in my hand, my heart in my throat. This was because Rome's history teacher had called and asked me to come in to have a discussion. I hated schools. I'd take visiting a hospital or walking my ass into a police station over walking into a school. And with my old profession, both of those were saying something. Not to mention, with my membership in the Rock Chicks, being able to visit a hospital or walk into a police station was an important skill to have. Moses told me he often didn't have his phone on him when he was at work. Still, for whatever reason, I pulled up his text string, which had 7 texts. Yes, I counted. Him giving me his address, me confirming I got it, him saying something sweet after I confirmed. Me telling him I was on my way to his house last night, him confirming he got that, and telling me he was looking forward to feeding me. Me texting that morning to say I'd had a good time the night before, him replying, telling me he did too. I'm at the school, Rome's teacher called, I'm worried, I typed in. Neither boy had had trouble with school. It took some tutoring to get them up to scratch when they started back after being out for so long. But then they just assimilated. Easy as pie. Which freaked me out. I talked to Jules about it because I'd found that odd. I thought that would be a battle too, and was surprised when it wasn't. "We'll keep an eye, Shirlene," she said. "But not for the normal reasons. Sometimes when kids get it good after they've had it bad, they try overly hard to prove they deserve to have something that's just their due, like an education. They don't want it taken away, so they go beyond the pale to make certain it isn't." It didn't seem like they were trying overly hard. I didn't have any practice, but it just seemed normal. They didn't have an aversion to school like I did when I was their age. They didn't jump for joy every morning at the prospect of hauling their asses out of bed, shoving their books in their bags, and heading out with a pep in their step. Since it was seemingly normal, we just rolled with it. And now I'd been called by a teacher to come in as soon as you can, Miss Jackson, and have a discussion. I stared at the text, wondering if I should send it. In usual circumstances, I might text Daisy. And it wasn't that I wasn't talking to her that I didn't type the text into her string. It was just, now there was Moses. Before I could chicken out, of a lot of things, I hit send, opened my door, pulled myself out of my car, and hoofed it on my high heels to the school. School was out for the day, so the halls were quiet, but I could see through the windows there was a woman at the reception desk in the administration office. It took a lot, but instead of giving in to my heebie-jeebies, I was in a school and turning around to walk right out, I walked in there. She looked up. "Hey," I greeted, "I'm Shirlene Jackson. Mr. Robinson called and said he wanted to talk about my boy." She nodded. "Just out the door to the left down the hall, take a right at the end. Mr. Robinson is in the second classroom on the right." I nodded back, muttered my gratitude and took off, my heels echoing on the tile in the empty hallways, my hackles coming up. I'd had to have meetings with the folks at school to get the boys admitted. I'd also had to go to parent-teacher conferences for 3 years running. None of this had been comfortable, and not because I was worried about my street-tough boys and new environs, or not only because of that. And I was seeing right then it was because it was bringing it all back. This wasn't just Leon and starting things with him when I was a junior and he was a senior, and how bad that all went. It was that back then, I hadn't come into me. I was awkward, uncertain. My older sister was popular, I was not. I hadn't found my way, and looking back at it, I'd always felt embarrassed, even humiliated at how I'd handled myself. But now I saw that there was no way I'd understand who I was, what I wanted, and how to get to it. Hell, I wasn't sure I knew any of that now. But then, I was a kid. Why did I expect so much of myself? I found the room and knocked on the open door, my eyes to the handsome, somewhat disheveled man sitting behind the desk. At my knock, he looked up at me, and I was relieved when he smiled. "Miss Jackson," he greeted. "That's me," I answered, taking a step in. He stood. "Thanks for coming." He gestured to the student desks in front of his own. "Please come in." I walked in farther as he looked down, shuffled papers around, grabbed some, and rounded his desk. "Have a seat," he invited, and as I took a seat at one of the student desks, he didn't return to his own. He sat at the one beside mine. "We met at parent-teacher conferences last winter." "I remember," I told him. "Sorry to take your time, but I thought this was important," he said. "What was important?" I asked. He offered the papers he had in his hand to me. "My students turn in their papers online. I printed this one out. It's Rome's report on the escalation of American involvement in the Vietnam War." Slowly, I reached out and took it. When I did, I felt my heart start beating faster because in the top left corner it said, "Perspectives of American Military Action in Vietnam, American History, Mr. Robinson, by Rome Jackson." Rome Jackson? Rome's last name wasn't Jackson. Mine was. "Do you go over your boys' homework, Ms. Jackson?" Mr. Robinson asked. I looked from the papers in my hand to him. "Sometimes, when they ask me." He dipped his head to the paper. "Did you read that?" I looked down at it, forcing my eyes to anything but the words Rome Jackson. There were no marks on the paper, no grade. I read the first couple of lines and saw this was not something Rome had asked me to look over. I looked back at Rome's teacher and shook my head. Mr. Robinson nodded his. "Right then, outside of it being glaringly obvious, he did more than watch a couple of episodes of a Burns documentary. A lot more. I'm not entirely certain how to describe the prose of that report." I felt my back hitch straight. "What are you saying?" He looks me right in the eye. "It's well beyond a high school senior's aptitude." That was when I felt my eyes narrow. "You saying my boy plagiarized this report?" He shook his head. "No, I'm saying Rome is an exceptionally gifted and intuitive writer."
"Say what?"
I stared at him. "I'm sorry I didn't bring this to your attention before," he went on. "However, even if his earlier reports and test essays were very good, I've noted as the semester wore on, his talent has markedly increased. That said, I've seen nothing from him like that." "He hates writing reports. It drives him round the bend," I said quietly. "Like, seriously." Mr. Robinson nodded. "I'm not surprised. For many outstanding writers, their need to tell their story, get their point across, doing this in the way they want the words to be crafted, to share their narrative, is a painful process. It can be very frustrating, as they can be very hard on themselves, because each word has to be the perfect one, and more. They all have to fit just right." I looked down at the paper. "It's my understanding Rome hasn't applied to any colleges," Mr. Robinson remarked. I lifted my gaze again to him. We had the talk, only briefly. He didn't seem interested, so I didn't push him. Another nod from Mr. Robinson with a gentle, "I know his history, Miss Jackson, and this doesn't surprise me. Saddens me, but doesn't surprise me. I will say that it's more than just this assignment that made it clear, however, with this." He tipped his head to the papers again. "It's more than clear he should go on to higher education."
"To be what?" I asked.
"That's yours," he replied, now pointing at the papers in my hand. "Take it and read it, and you'll understand. But I'll tell you what it did for me. That was not a high school report. That was not even a college-level essay. When I read that, I forgot I was reading an assignment. It was like I was reading a book, a very good one. And when it was done, my first reaction was annoyance because I wanted more."
"Lord," I whispered.
"He took a chance with that, Miss Jackson. He didn't simply inform me of what he'd learned about American involvement in Vietnam.
There are four parts to that report told from the perspectives of an American general, a member of the Viet Cong, an American Marine, and a Vietnamese peasant. It reads like fiction, even if every word is factually correct. And the even-handed empathy for each viewpoint that he shared through his narrative was astonishing, especially as written by the hand of a high school senior who wasn't even alive during the conflict he was writing about."
"Lord," I breathed.
"Rome is a natural storyteller, Miss Jackson. He can't teach what he's got. His voice is unique, and although I'm not surprised he struggles with it, you will not find even a hint of that in his work. It flows beautifully."
My eyes drifted down to the paper.
"It's too late now to apply for him to start in the fall," Mr. Robinson continued. "But I'd strongly advise you have another discussion with him. With his grades and the way he writes an essay, he'd have no issues getting accepted, and he could perhaps begin for midterm enrollment, or he could take some time and start next year."
I didn't see Rome slaving away at a computer, writing books for a living. I didn't even see him walking around with a backpack on some university campus. What I saw was the fact my boy's world was opening up. He had opportunities. He had choices. His past was bleak, no matter what way you looked at it. But his future was bright, whatever way he wanted to take it. I didn't feel I had any of that when I sat at a desk like this years ago. But I got to live it with Rome. And sniff. "Maybe I should have pushed it," I told the papers.
"I wouldn't have," Mr. Robinson told me. I looked at him. "It's only a guess," he continued. "But that guess is that you're sensitive to allowing both your boys to feel in control of their lives, their destinies. This is crucial, not only because of their pasts, but for them to learn to make smart choices for their future. It is far from necessary for Rome to have a college degree in order to be a writer, if that's his choice. What's necessary to be a writer is to fill your life with as many experiences as you can get to inform your writing, enrich it. If more schooling is not his thing," he shrugged, "it's not. It isn't everyone's thing. He can gain life experience in a lot of different ways, and I'm sure we can both agree he has more than enough of one kind already. But I'd broach the subject with him again."
"I will, Mr. Robinson." He smiled. "Please, call me Keith."
"And you should call me Charlene."
His smile got bigger. I smiled back, then looked down at the paper.
"I've been teaching history a long time," he said, and my gaze shifted back to him. "And I have never, not once, assigned a paper when a student has used that kind of creativity in order to fulfill an assignment. I honest to God don't know how to grade it. I felt like an armchair quarterback who's never played football in his entire life, calling a play."
"Wow," I whispered. "Boy, I couldn't wait to read that report."
"Precisely," he grinned.
"I'll have a talk with him. With them, soon as I can.
I'm glad to hear it, Shirlene.
I stood. He stood. We shook hands, and I didn't care what he read in me holding that report to my chest as he walked me to his classroom door.
Shirlene,
he said when we'd reached it. I stopped just in the hall and turned to him.
After my mind unboggled reading that report, he started, it came to me, the young man who wrote it, and how that young man got to the point in his life he was in my class and able to write it.
I stared in his eyes.
They were very lucky to find you, he said quietly.
I feel it's the other way around, I replied. He gave me a gentle smile.
Like I said, they were very lucky to find you.
Gotta admit, Keith, wish I had a teacher like you in high school. He seemed embarrassed by the compliment, and if he'd scuffed the floor with the toe of his shoe, I would not have been surprised. But glad Rome got you, I finished.
That pleasure has been mine,
he returned. Like I said, glad Rome got you. He chuckled, and I grinned at him. We said our goodbyes, and I walked a whole lot faster back to my car. I didn't even start it up after I tossed my bag to the passenger seat before I turned my attention to Rome's report. I had no idea how long it took me to read. What I knew when I reached the end was that my boy could seriously write. I was nearly home when my car rang. I looked down at the dashboard to see it was Moses calling. I took the call, greeting, "Hey, my man."
You all right?
Yep.
Rome all right?
Apparently, I got Alex Haley living under my roof.
Say again?
Just heard the word that Rome's an exceptionally gifted storyteller.
Who gave you this word?
His history teacher. And just to say, I just spent the last however many minutes reading Rome's Perspective of American Military Action in Vietnam, and the dude does not lie.
Moses chuckled. So it was good news.
Good? Hell no. Exceptionally awesome? Absolutely. We didn't talk much about college. Rome didn't seem into it.
Sniff either.
I'm opening up discussions again, I shared.
Good,
he murmured. I let seconds slip by before I whispered. My boy is exceptionally gifted.
Does this surprise you, baby?
Moses whispered back. Not even a little bit. I let more seconds slip by before I asked, how do I get him to believe it?
No idea, sweetheart. But I think the best way to try is just to start.
I'll be doing that.
Good.
I saw my house on the block, so I said, almost home. Got pride to give and college lectures to speechify. Another chuckle before,
call me later, tell me how it goes.
Will do.
As you know, girls are back with me tonight. I'll find out their schedules, and if there's an opening when they're doing something else, with someone else, somewhere else, we'll fill it.
That made me feel warm all over. Works for me.
Later, baby. Thanks for sharing this news with me.
I hit the garage door opener. Thanks for listening to it. Have fun with your girls.
Will do. Bye, sweetheart.
Bye, Moses. We disconnected. I drove into my garage and sat in my car while I hit the door opener again to close it. I didn't get out until the door was down. Old habits. I barely walked into the house before I heard Sniff shout from the basement.
That you, Shirlene?
You better hope so. I shouted back, dumped my Chloe on the kitchen bar, but kept hold of the report as I walked to the steps to the basement. I went down to see two tall, good-looking boys sprawled on the sectional with game controllers in their hands, attention riveted to the TV, and after-school junk consumption evidence all over the coffee table in front of them.
Pause, I ordered.
Not even a hesitation, they paused the game. Then their eyes came to me. God, my boys were such good boys. I looked to Rome. Just got back from rapping with Mr. Robinson. His expression shifted from alert to wary, but he said not a word. Sniff, however, as usual, wasn't silent.
Oh, shit!
Apparently, I walked closer to them and tossed the report among the chip bags and cookie packaging on the square coffee table that sat in the middle of the sectional. You wrote a report he had no clue how to grade. Rome's gaze dropped to the papers, then shot back to me.
Because it was so good, I finished.
Whoa, Sniff muttered. Rome remained silent and stoic. In the early days, he'd let things through, give things away. He'd been among the hot bunch so long, he'd learned when he wanted to hide something, how to make sure it remained hidden. It worked my nerves, but whatever. I looked between them both. I'm gonna say this once, and I want it heard. Are you both listening to me?
Yeah, Shirlene, Sniff answered.
Yeah,
Rome grunted.
Are you listening good? I pushed.
Yeah, Shirlene. Sniff was getting impatient, maybe to get back to his game, probably because he knew a Shirlene lecture was coming and he wanted it over. Rome just nodded. When I got you, and I knew I was going to be able to keep you, I set money aside. I didn't know what it was for, didn't care. Just knew it was for you. They both stiffened, even Rome. I kept at them. I know you don't ask for anything. Don't expect anything. Maybe don't want anything you can't earn yourself, but that's not how families work. Families look out for each other. And we're family. And I know you two can take care of yourselves, but you gotta give a woman something. And what I want is to give something to you. We had the talk, I didn't push it. We're gonna have it again, because I've been informed, Rome, that you got some serious talent with writing. And it didn't escape me with either of you that you get yourself some good grades, even if you don't try real hard. So, I want you both to think about using that money to go to college.
I'd rather use it to get some wheels, Sniff muttered.
I'm buying you both a car when you graduate, I reminded him.
I'd rather use it to get some shit-hot wheels, Sniff amended. Boy, you don't quit cussing in front of me, I'm gonna knock you into outer space, I snapped.
Sniff grinned at me. I rolled my eyes to the ceiling, drew in a breath, let it out, and looked back at them. You two can be anything you want to be, I said quietly. They stiffened again. I powered through it, and I want no limits on that. We don't talk about it, and we don't have to. But I'm just gonna say it is not lost on me the limits you've had in your lives, and I want you to know right here, right now, those limits are done. You want to go to college, it's yours. You don't? That's your choice. But I want you to think real hard on that, and know even if it takes a while for you to come to that decision, the resources are there for you to have it. You want something else for your lives, it's your life. You get to make that choice. I'm just saying I want you to discuss that with me. Bottom line is, you got choices. There are no limits. I don't care if I'm covering your asses for years of medical school and residency. Your futures include options. Give me the privilege of giving that to you. Don't limit yourselves because you got any concerns at all about taking it. They said nothing. Am I heard? I asked.
You heard, Shirlene,
Rome rumbled.
Yeah, you heard, Sniff put in.
I looked to Rome. That report, son, I read it. Nothing else to say, but to share the fact I got so much pride for you, it hurts me inside having to contain it and not let it explode all over the place.
Shirlene, he whispered.
He wasn't hiding anything right then. The goodness coming to me from him came strong and pure. God, I loved that boy. Sniff punched his own heart with his fist twice, then reached out and punched Rome in the arm with it.
Way to go, my brother.
I loved both of them.
Piss off,
Rome muttered, and a little bit more eked out. He was embarrassed. I fought grinning as I ordered, don't tell your brother to piss off.
He's annoying,
Rome returned. He's proud of you, too, I shot back.
I totally am. Sniff stated.
Suddenly, Rome pushed up from his lounge and clipped,
Shut up.
Don't tell me to shut up when...
Sniff started. He stopped talking when Rome pointed in his face, then pointed to the ceiling and hissed,
Shut. Up.
Sniff shut up, tensed. Then both boys shot off the couch like rockets. My heart dropped to my feet.
Stay down here,
Rome ordered quietly, as he and Sniff swiftly made their way to the stairs.
What's going on? I asked.
Got your phone?
Sniff asked as an answer.
No, I told him.
He dug his phone out of his pocket and tossed it to me.
Oh, no.
Boys, I snapped in a whisper. Rome was four steps up, Sniff two down from him, when Rome halted and turned to me.
Stay down here and quiet, he commanded on his own whisper. If I wasn't so freaked, I would lament all the time I allowed that boy to hang with the hot bunch, learning to be so damned bossy. Instead, I was freaked because something was up. And in the life of the RCHB, something being up could be anything. I mean, I'd shot a man in my own home because the RCHB, that time it was mostly HB with the RC dragged in, had some big shit going down. Was I going to let my teenage boys slink unarmed up to face uncertain anything and wait downstairs for them? Hell no. I started to follow when I heard, squealed, Well, look at you sugar bunches of love. You get more handsome each time I see you. Daisy. Daisy had broken into my house. As fast as my high heels would take me, I stomped up my stairs. Nope, not Daisy, the rock chicks. Every one of them. Daisy, Indy, Jet, Roxy, Jules, Ava, Stella, Sadie, Allie, and Annette thrown in. I hoped for comic relief. Because we'd need some comedy, seeing as I was about to lose my mind. Did you all break into my house? I asked furiously.
Well, no, sugar, Daisy answered calmly. You gave me your key to check on things when you had that staycation, that time Vance and Jules took the boys camping for spring break.
Shit.
I began.
Zip it,
Allie ordered. I stared daggers at her and would learn quickly I should not have wasted time staring daggers and instead should have maybe gone for my stun gun when I found myself bum-rushed by 10 rock chicks through my great room, down my hall, into my bedroom.
All's good, just rock chick business,
Jet called behind her to my boys before she slammed the door, turned to rest her back to it, and glared at me.
Two dates and no spill?
She whisper hissed.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, are you seriously serious? Roxy demanded.
I crossed my arms on my chest.
Can't do a freeze out and spill.
Oh my goddess!
Annette screeched.
This room is fucking fat. I mean, I can see myself. Everywhere.
She did a whirl, checking herself out in a variety of directions. What could I say? It was my bedroom. I decorated in glamour. And glamour meant mirror.
Annette,
Allie clipped. Annette stopped whirling and grinned at me.
Even your furniture has mirrors and you got yourself a purple padded headboard? Sweet!
It's lavender, I corrected.
Whatevs,
she replied. It's sweet!
Can we stop talking about Shirlene's headboard?
Indy asked.
Unless that headboard's seen some action, Ava added.
What kind of girl do you think I am? I asked. We've only had two dates.
A healthy red-blooded one,
Ava answered.
Have you kissed him?
Roxy asked.
Have you slept with him?
Allie asked.
What's he look like?
Stella asked.
Is he tall?
Sadie asked.
Is he hot?
Indy asked.
Is he sweet?
Jet asked.
Are those pillowcases satin?
Annette asked.
Oh, for goodness sake, let her speak, Jules demanded of the rock chicks.
She looked to me. By the way, you should know I know him. In a professional capacity, and I approve. From Jules, that said a lot. She was a social worker at King's Shelter for Kids. I was still tickled at her because she'd played her part in putting me out there. "He's tall, he's hot, he's sweet, I've kissed him, I've not slept with him," I answered the room at large. "And now you can all just get on out of my house." Roxy plopped her ass on the low bench at the foot of my bed, covered in purple-gray patterned velvet, declaring, "Sherlene, you cannot be pissed we set you up with a tall, sweet, hot guy." "I can't?" I asked. "No," she answered immediately. "Did he really ram his grocery cart into yours at the store?" Sadie queried. "Yes, he did," I bit off at Sadie. "Hot," Indy murmured.
"Totally," Ava replied.
"He's a good man. He's a loving man. He's got two daughters he adores, a job that's more a calling, a nice home he lets his oldest decorate," I allowed myself to share. "That's fantastic," Jules said. "And he could have found out who I was and what I did, and excused himself to go to the bathroom and never came back," I finished.
"Oh, please,"
Indy drawled, while throwing herself on my bed, totally unpoofing the perfect fold of my duvet. So I narrowed my eyes at her. "Like Lee and the boys didn't investigate him to within an inch of his life," she continued. That was when my eyes, of their own accord, bugged out at her. "Yeah, and followed him for days," Stella put in.
"Say what?" "And then Lee had it out with him face to face to make sure it was all good, and he wasn't gonna find out about your history and pull a loser move like that," Jet added.
"Well, I knew that last part." "They investigated him?" I asked.
"Of course," Indy answered. "Does he know this?" I asked.
"Yep, didn't care. Just wanted to go to dinner with you," Roxy shared.
Good Lord, he didn't care. Moses didn't care the hot bunch had invaded his privacy, his history, followed him. He just wanted to go out to dinner with me.
I jumped when a pounding came at the door, and through it Rome yelled,
"Sherlene, you okay?"
"Those boys are so cute," Daisy whispered. "They so love their Sherlene."
"I'm fine,"
I yelled back, hoping he hadn't overheard anything.
"And our talk is over. You can go back to playing your game."
No hesitation before.
"You sure?"
"We're her girls," Daisy shouted.
"Of course she's sure. It's just girl talk, sugar bunch. Go on back to your game."
I gave it a beat until I sensed Rome leaving and turned to Jules. "I had a conversation with his history teacher today. He reported to me Rome's an exceptionally gifted writer."
"Whoa. Wow.
Really?" she asked, but smiled and said, "Cool," before I could answer. "I reopened discussion about college with both of them," I informed her. Her smile got bigger.
"Awesome.
As great as it is, Rome's exceptionally gifted at something. It's not news. He's a fantastic kid. But we're off hot guy topic," Allie butted in. I looked to Allie. "I've said all I'm gonna say."
"You totally have not said all you're gonna say," she shot back.
"Yo, bitch,"
Annette called, and I looked to my bed to see her standing at my bedside table, the drawer open.
"I approve of your choice of vibrator, but you got yourself a hot guy, and you don't have any rubbers in here."
Only Annette could get away with snooping through a woman's drawer with said woman right in the room with her. That was to say, she actually couldn't, but she was such a good-natured hippie chick, you couldn't get mad at her.
"I'll get Lee to buy you some," Indy offered.
My eyes darted to her.
"You will not."
"Sherlene,"
Roxy started hesitantly,
"perhaps the ship has sailed on pregnancy, but there's more than one reason to use prophylactics."
"I don't need sex education courses at age 53, I snapped at Roxy.
"Then why don't you have condoms?" Jet asked.
"Because Moses hasn't even stepped foot in my house, much less my bedroom," I said to Jet.
"And we're not there.
We're taking it slow." There was general vocal merriment to this comment before Ava murmured,
"He crashed his grocery cart into hers. They so aren't taking it slow."
"Oh my God,
We get to do a new pool. I'm in for $50 for Shirlene getting the business on our next date, Sadie decreed. I see, Daisy began, tapping a long, French manicured nail that had cherry blossoms painted across it on her lower lip. Date number 4. Grocery cart ramming, there's no bet here. It's totally gonna be the next date, Stella announced. It's actually a shocker it wasn't the first date. Teenage boy blocks, Ava accurately surmised. I had to stop this. Even if the famous rock chick getting the business pool was started by me, so I deserve this ridiculousness. He knows Leon beat me, sexually abused me, and piled a load of shit on me. He wants me to understand he's not Leon, so he's dedicated to taking it slow, I retorted. Sister girl, Daisy whispered. That was when I felt the change in the room, and with it I felt the gentle eyes on me. I swallowed. Then I announced, I'm not sure I'm worthy of him. He's dedicated to proving I am. It's going to take some time. But he wants this, and I definitely want it, so we're going to give it a shot. You're scared? Allie noted softly. I'm terrified. 2 dates, I'd never had it so good, I replied. This makes me happy, Jules put in. I looked to her. That's part of the scary. It makes me happy. But most of the scary is it seems I'm making him happy. And he's the kind of man I don't ever want that to stop. That's pure Shirlene. More worried about giving than getting, Indy mumbled. I was struck. Say what? I asked her. She grinned gently at me. You put the super bad into badass, Shirlene, but you're the most selfless person I know. Her grin strengthened, but didn't get less gentle. Outside all these chickies in the room, of course. We're so happy for you we could spit, Sadie declared, a little grin on her fairy princess face. Look at this, Annette cried, and I looked in the direction of her voice, to see she had the massive mirror that sat on the floor open to expose my enormous and perfectly laid out jewelry display inside. She was swinging the door open and closed. You can, like, accessorize, then check yourself out to see if it works, like, right away. Annette, Roxy called impatiently. Annette turned from the mirror, closing it as she did, and locked eyes on me. And woman, if I ever hear you say you're not worthy of anything or anyone, I'm gonna shake you until your teeth rattle. You've got a beautiful soul. Nothing dims that, not one thing. It might have lived in the shadows for a while, but it surprises nobody that it broke through. So don't you dare talk yourself down, not in front of your girls, not in front of anyone. Are you understanding me? Well, ooh-wee, I'll be damned. Annette had some badass to her. I started. I didn't get it all out because Jet went flying from the door as it was thrown open. Everyone turned to it to see Todd in his flight attendant uniform tear in. He slammed the door, looked around, and snapped. I told you I was on my way. It isn't easy getting from DIA into town at rush hour, and you started without me. Chill, sugar. We've been waiting days. You know we couldn't wait any longer, Daisy said. Not even 10 minutes? Todd asked. All the rock chicks, save Annette, looked guilty. Todd turned to me. Is he cute? Todd was Indian Lee's neighbor. Todd was one half of Todd and Stevie. Todd, and obviously Stevie, was gay. It wasn't that Todd was gay that he was a rock chick. It was arguable seeing as they swung both ways, those ways being both Hot Bunch and Rock Chick, but Tex and Duke, both who worked at Indy's bookstore, both not gay, were also de facto Rock Chicks. It was just how we rolled. I didn't know if hot translated to cute in gay speak. Still, I replied, mm-hmm. He leaned back and grinned. Well, all right. Todd can buy you some rubbers, Annette declared. Todd's eyes got big. At me. You don't have any condoms, honey? He asked. Can we give the condoms a rest? I requested.
I'll talk to Eddie, Jet murmured. I guess we couldn't.
Don't talk to Eddie, Indy advised swiftly.
Why not? Jet asked.
Eddie's not a big fan.